We're holding on Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about a story where one time Rabbi Eliezer spent Shabbos in the sukkah of Yochanan and Rabbi Loi. We said it wasn't actually during the end. We said it wasn't actually during Sukkot. It was on a regular Shabbos some other time during the year. Anyway, it was sunny and it was hot, and the guy wanted to spread a sheet out over the sukkah in order to keep the sun off Rabbi Eliezer. And a couple of times, Rabbi Eliezer, rather than answering him directly, diverted to another topic in order not to answer, because as the Gemara said, he never said anything that he didn't explicitly hear from his Rebbeim, as the Gemara is going to talk about shortly now, about that was one of his Midas Toivas. So the issue is, in other words, that Rabbi Eliezer did not want to paskin on this. So the question is, the Gemara says, why not? The Tifshit Lemi Didei, shouldn't Rabbi Eliezer be able to answer the question based on his own svara, which in fact we find in Machloikis on a very related subject from which we can learn what Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is about this, and therefore he should be outright telling Yochanan Rabbi Loi that it's also. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, a thing for closing up a window. So it could be, for example, like a window shade or something like that, whatever. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer, I mean, Bisman Shah Kosher Vitolari, Rabbi Eliezer says if it's tied to the windowsill or to the wall above the window, Vitolari, and it's hanging there, meaning that the rope that it's hanging from is not so long that it's going to drag on the ground, Poikikin Boy, then you're allowed to close up the window with it on Shabbos, because the fact that it's hanging and the fact that it's not sitting on the ground shows that it's obviously something that's meant to close the window, and therefore it doesn't look like you're adding to an oil on Shabbos. The imlab ain't poikikin boy, and if not, then you're not allowed to, because Rabbi Eliezer holds you're not even allowed to make a temporary addition to an oil. The chum say either way, you're allowed to close up the window with it. So we've talked about before. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, Machloikas Rashi and Tosfos in the previous perek, whether the concept of making an oihel on Shabbos applies only to a roof, which is what Rashi holds, or does it apply also to a vertical mechitza, which is what Tosfos holds. According to Rashi, you would necessarily have to say that the Machloikas over here is talking not so much about a window and a wall, but more like a skylight. According to Tosfos, it could well be talking about a window and a wall. Whatever the case, the point is, Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to add to a temporary tent on Shabbos, so you're not allowed to add a temporary thing to a tent, to an oil on Shabbos. So therefore, on that basis, same idea. Then you can't spread a sheet over the part of the sukkah where the sun is shining in, because that would be adding to an oil. All right. So why doesn't Rabbi Eliezer just answer that instead of diverting him to another topic and then leaving the sukkah altogether rather than approving of what he did? You just tell him outright, it's awesome. The answer is, the difference is hosam hud mevatel. The difference is there's a good chance that he might be mevatel the thing that's used to close the window over there and leave it there for long term, and therefore it's going to be considered part of the wall, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer was going to say that would be awesome. Here, he's not going to be mevatel the sheet that he was going to spread on the sukkah. He's not going to be mevatel up there. He's soon enough going to take it off. Therefore, not necessarily would it be awesome, and that's why Rabbi Eliezer wasn't certain about it, and therefore, or not, he wasn't certain, but he hadn't heard from his Rebbeim explicitly one way or the other on the topic, and therefore he didn't want to say anything based on his own svara. Okay. So more on this topic about how Rabbi Eliezer did with this and with other things. It happened once that Rabbi Eliezer spent Shabbos in the upper Galil. This might have been the same time as before, where he was staying by Yochanan ben Eloi, or it might have been a different time, whatever. They asked him 30 questions regarding the halachas of sukkah. 12 of them, he told them, I heard from my Rebbeim such and such, and told them the answer. And another 18, he told them, I did not hear anything, and therefore I don't want to give an answer. Rabbi Yosef says it was the other way around. 18, he says, I have answers to from my Rebbeim, 12 not. So they were surprised. Hayitachen, you're only giving answers that you got from your Rebbeim. What about your own svaris? They said, Kol dvarecha ein an element pi hashvua. So what is everything you're only, everything you're saying is only what you heard from your Rebbeim? Don't you have any independent svaris of your own? So as we talked about yesterday, there is actually some of the Mefarshim say that in fact after his Rebbe, after Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai passed away, then he was more free to say svaris of his own, and then he would. There's different other answers, including that there's a difference between something, where there's a halacha versus something that's purely based on svara. Something purely based on svara, sure, of course, a Talmud Chacham is supposed to come up with svaras on his own and come up with ideas in Torah, but things that are the actual halacha, what to do, what not to do, then he would only stick to what he heard from his Rebbeim. Anyway, Amar Lahem, he answers them, his kaktuni loyma davar shalosh shamayti mipira boisai. You're making me, you're forcing me to say something that I didn't hear from my Rebbeim. In other words, so Rashi explains, I'm going to tell you my midas, and this is one of them that I don't say things over that I didn't hear from my Rebbeim. Marsha explains, in other words, within Rashi, that we can understand what Rabbi Eliezer said in two ways. We can understand it as a factual statement. Now I'm going to have to tell you something of that I didn't actually hear from my Rebbeim. I only observed them doing, which is not my usual way of doing things, but you're asking, so I have to explain to you why I'm doing this. Or the other thing, as he says, he's answering them with a rhetorical question, the Lashon Tmiya. How could it be that you're going to make me do something that I didn't hear from my Rebbeim? That you're thinking that I should give you answers that are not based on, that are not something that I heard from my Rebbeim? You should know something. Let me tell you my midas. Nobody ever came before me to the Beis Medrash. I was always the first one there. I never slept in the Beis Medrash, not a regular sleep where a person is sleeping for a couple of hours and not even a nap. I never left somebody behind in the Beis Medrash and went out. I always made sure that I'm the last one out. I never talked idle talk. Anything that I'm talking is always, Rashi says, divrei havai v'schoik, things that are like the foolishness or jokes or whatever. I never talked like that. I always talked in words of Torah. And I never said anything that I did not hear explicitly from my Rebbeim. So in other words, the point is, why is he mentioning all these other things? Rashi says, you should know, when he says, the fact that I don't know the answers to 12 or 18 of these questions, it's not because I wasn't there, it's not because I wasn't paying attention or whatever. I was in fact in the Beis Medrash all the time. So in fact, they didn't say any answer to these 12 or 18 things, and I know that for a fact. And therefore I can't give you an answer, because that's one of my midas, is not to say over something that I didn't hear explicitly from my Rebbeim. Marsha also teaches out a couple of these things that were saying that he nobody ever came before him to the Beis Medrash, and the Gemara is going to say this now about Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, which is who Rabbi Eliezer learned it from. The point being, in other words, that like this, if somebody else came before him, for one thing, they might have to have a guard there, like they had by the Beis Medrash in Hillel's times, for example, to determine, should somebody come in, is he worthy of coming in or not? Like this, if Rabbi Eliezer and before him Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is the first one there, then that avoids the need for that. He himself can determine who's worthy to come in and who's not, rather than delegating it to a shomer. Also, the idea is that this way, if somebody else comes first, then there might end up being argument among the Talmidim who's going to open the door for the Rebbe and who's going to stand up first for him. So like this, he would always make sure to come first. So similar, these Gemara says, his last one was, I never said anything that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. So therefore, I can't give you answers to those 12 or 18 things, because that would depend on things that I heard from Svaris, that I heard from my Rebbeim, and I haven't heard them. Similarly, Omru Olavar Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, they said a similar thing about Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, which this is where Rabbi Eliezer learned his midas from. He never in his whole life spoke idle talk. And by the way, it's interesting because the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, first of all, with both of them, actually, with Rabbi Eliezer, the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says that he was actually an Am Haaretz until 22 or 28 years old, and only then did he go learn Torah from Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. So it would have to mean that even during the years when he was an Am Haaretz, he already had some of these midas, at least some of these midas, and he's not just talking idle talk. Unless, of course, he just means, when he says miyamai, he may mean ever since I became a new person, the Talmid Chacham, Rabbi Eliezer, rather than Am Haaretz Al Eliezer Ben Hurkanus. I don't know. With Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, similarly, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that for his first 40 years, he was engaged in business. So what we'd be saying over here is, now there it's not that he afterwards did, that he afterwards became a Talmid Chacham, but afterwards he was a Talmid Chacham before that, and he was learning part-time and working part-time. And even then, we're saying that he didn't speak Sichas Cholim. Next, v'loy holach dalat amos v'loy Torah v'loy tefillin. Rabbi Yochanan never walked 4 amos without saying words of Torah and wearing tefillin. So as he's walking, he's constantly learning Torah. V'loy kidmei adam beis medrash. Nobody ever came ahead of him to the beis medrash, like we said. V'loy yoshin beis medrash l'shenas keva v'l'shenas arai. He never slept in the beis medrash a temporary nap or a long-term sleep, like we said. Also, Rabbi Yochanan never thought words of Torah in dirty alleys. When you're walking in an alley over there and you have human waste or certain kinds of animal waste that smell bad, you're not allowed to learn Torah. You're not allowed to think words of Torah over there. So one positive, why are we mentioning it as a midas chasidus of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai? There are opinions in brachas that say that it's allowed. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai may have said that technically the halacha is like those opinions, but still he was machmer on himself. Marsha says the vote is, even though he's constantly learning, nevertheless, he was able to hold himself back when he's in Mavoya Samutunafas in order not to think words of Torah. Also, he never left anybody behind in the Beis Medrash. He was always the last one out. Nobody would ever find him just sitting there doing nothing and being quiet. He's constantly sitting and learning, which means also, you know, he could have conceivably been sitting there and reviewing Torah in his mind. But no, because that would look to people like he's just sitting there doing nothing. So therefore, to avoid that, to avoid giving people a wrong impression, and they would learn from that. But you don't have to be so careful learning Torah all the time. He would make sure to actually be learning all the time, verbally, that is. Next, nobody ever opened the door for his talmidim in this medrash. Ela hu ba'atzma, he himself would always open the door. For like we said before, that way, first of all, nobody has to be jealous of each other that you got to open the door for Rebbe last time. And second of all, this way you don't need a shomer by the entrance because he himself can determine who can come in or not. Also, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai never said anything that he didn't hear from his Rebbeim, like we said. Another thing that he did, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai never said, it's time to leave, it's time to close up, it's time to end the shiur, and we have to leave the Beis Medrash. With the exception of Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur, where there he would say, it's time, Seder's over, it's time to go home. Erev Pesach, there's a couple of reasons why. The Rashbam and Pesachim explained that the reason is because Erev Pesach, the fathers need to go home to make sure that their kids take a nap so that they can be up for the Seder. Rashi says that reason over there. The Rashbam brings over there is that this way we're not talking about on Erev Pesach, we're talking about on Pesach night. They would be at the Beis Medrash also, but he would tell them we need to end Seder because you need to go home and start your Pesach Seder early in order that the kids don't fall asleep. So that's Erev Pesach or Leil Pesach as the case may be, and Erev Yom Kippurim because you have to go home and eat the Seder before Yom Kippur. So the Gemara finishes off. Rabbi Eliezer, his Talmud followed all of these same practices. So one of them was, we said that he didn't say anything that he didn't hear from his Rebbeim, at least not something that depends on Svara. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer now, when they're asking him things of Svara regarding the halachas as far as Sukkah, then some of them he wasn't going to answer. Okay. Now let's talk more about Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai himself. Hillel HaZaken had 80 Talmidim. Now, we don't mean that he had only 80 Talmidim necessarily. The same way as Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai himself, if we say that he had 5 Talmidim in Pirkei Avos, doesn't mean only those. It means those were the highest caliber Talmidim. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai himself, for example, it says that that he would, before the Churban, he would be sitting in the shade of the Heichel and darshaning to the whole people, because teaching them the halachas before Yom Tov. So in that sense, all of them are his Talmidim. But as far as the close Talmidim, the top caliber Talmidim, he had five. Same thing over here, we're saying Hillel HaZaken had eight. Of these eight, 30 of them deserved that the Shechina should rest on them like Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, of course, you know, like come the Yisrael Navi to Moshe, but in other words, that they would have a very, very, that they would have the highest possible level of Nevuah, close to his. Another 30 were worthy that the sun would stand still for them like the way it stood still for Yoshua. Esrim, Benanim, and then you had 20 average ones where there's nothing that special about them. Godol Shebekul and Yonis and Ben Uziel. Of those 80 Talmidim, the greatest was Yonis and Ben Uziel. Katan Shebekul and Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was the least of all of them. And even though he was the least, the least accomplished of all of them, let's talk about what he did accomplish. Amru Olivar Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Shalai Niach Mikra, that he didn't, Shalai Niach, he didn't leave aside. In other words, there's not a single thing of the following things that he did not leave aside as unimportant and didn't know it thoroughly. That he knew thoroughly Mikra, Tanakh, or Mishnah, Gemara, which is the expert. Now, of course, at that time, the Mishnah and the Gemara hadn't been compiled yet as we have them. But Mishnah means the basic halachas, the basic Mishnah, what eventually became the Mishnah and the Braisa. Gemara then would be the explanations which is the meat of what the Gemara that we learn, where the Amoraim go through what the earlier generation said and delve into it and analyze it and figure out the reasons behind it and when it applies and when not and so forth. So that kind of learning existed in earlier times as well. That's all part of learning and understanding Torah Shabbat Peh, and Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai mastered every detail of that. Halachas v'agadus, the halachas meaning halacha l'moshe b'sinai, Rashi says, and agadus, agadta, dikduke Torah, details of Torah. For example, when you have, let's say, extra letters in the Torah from which we learn from them different things, like we're going to talk about further down on this Amud, an example of that, where we learn something where we learn something from an extra hey in a pasuk. So that's Dikduke Torah. The Dikduke Sofrim, also the details of the Sofrim, which is where they came, where the Chachamim, the Chachamim of later generations, made Xeris and Takonis and everything of the Torah to make a fence around the Torah. So he knew all of those also. Kalim v'chamurim, all the kavachomers, all the things that you can learn by a kavachomer. Xeris Shabbos, all the things that you can learn by Xeris Shabbos. Tkufos, as well as also not just knowledge of pure Torah itself, but also knowledge of things that are not directly in Torah, but things that are important in order to understand certain aspects of Torah. So Tkufos, which is the various details of astronomy, the motions of the sun and the moon that are necessary in order to understand certain halachas. The gematrios, also gematrios, which means it includes things like gematria, like we're familiar with, where we take the word and figure out the sum of the letters of it and learn things from that. And Rashi gives an example, for example, where we learn a halacha from that, from such a thing. But also the word gematria in Gemara terminology also includes what we think of as at bash and other such substitution ciphers like that, where you substitute one letter for another. And Rashi brings actually that we even have examples of it in Tanakh. For example, there's a couple of places in Sefer Yirmiyah where it refers to Bavel as Sheshach, because Beis becomes Shin in Atbash and Lamed becomes Chof. So that's also included in Gematrios. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai delved into and knew all of those as well. Also, Sichas Malachi Asharis, the speech of the Malach, of the ministering Malachim, the Sichas Shadim, and the speech of Shadim, the Sichas Dekolim, and the speech of palm trees. So Rashi says about all those three, I don't know what those are. There are a couple of different, there are a couple of things that different other Rishonim explain. Sichas Malach Asharis and Sichas Shadim, that Ashbam in Bava Basra, where you also have this Gemara, explains. It means, in other words, that people want to beswear a Malach to do such and such for them. People want to beswear a shed to do such and such for them. So therefore, you need to know how the malachim and how the, you need to know how to talk to the malach and how to talk to the shed. That's what we mean by sichas malachi asharis and sichas shedim. As far as sichas dekolim, it can just mean what people talk about palm trees, but actually, the Rishonim bring a very interesting thing from a high Gaon who says that there are certain people who have the ability to understand when trees are rustling. And we're not talking about, obviously, when it's windy, the leaves and branches of the tree are going to rustle. But when it's a calm day, they still rustle a little bit. There are certain rare people who can understand from that what the trees are saying, whether the trees are saying and expressing something by the movement of their leaves. And Rabbi Gaon brings in this connection about one of the Gaonim who lived about 200 years before him, where they said about him that he had this ability of knowing Sichas Dekolim. Anyway, Mesholos Kovsin, also Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew various Mesholim, various parables involving laundrymen, or that laundrymen would tell over. Mesholos Shualim and Mesholim involving foxes. These are the kinds of things. Mesholim involving laundrymen and foxes are examples of Mesholim that can be used to illustrate and to illuminate things in Torah. You have, for example, where it says about Shlomo HaMelech that he had 3,000 mashal, that 3,000 mashalim, where he would use various mashalim like that in order to illuminate ideas in Torah and explain them to the common people. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew those as well. Davar gadol v'davar katan. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew the big things and the small things. What do those mean? Davar gadol ma'aseh merkava. The big thing means ma'aseh merkava, means the deep secrets of Kabbalah. And the davar katan havayis d'abaye v'rava. And the small thing refers to the discussions of Abaye and Rava. Now, Abaye and Rava themselves are several hundred years after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So we don't mean that he said them in their name. But what we mean is all the various points in the Gemara that Abaye and Rava came up with to discuss and to delve into and to pick apart the Mishnayos and Braisos and all, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew all of those and figured all them out, and later on they were forgotten, and then Abaye and Rava came up with them independently again. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew them in his times. Now, how do we call Abaye and Rava, which are the central thing of the entire Gemara, of Torah Shabbat Peh, how do we call those a davar katan? So on a simple level, what we mean is, in other words, we're not chas v'shalom putting it down. We're just saying, in other words, the fact is, I mean, there's something that involves so the Ritzvah, for example, says what it means is when you get down to it, how does it come that there are Abaye and Rava in the first place? Is because the Amoroyim, and for that matter, the Tanoim, didn't always, I mean, they learned as much as possible, but there were details that they didn't know clearly, whether because of forgetfulness or whether because they didn't apply themselves enough or whatever. And in that sense, it's called davar katan, not because it's unimportant, chas v'shalom, but because the fact is it comes about because of human limitations, because they didn't learn enough or because they forgot or whatever it is. On the other hand, the Rambam also in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, the Rambam spends the first four chapters of Hilchos Yesod HaTorah talking about Ma'ase Merkava and Ma'ase Bereishis, and then he says, so we see in the Gemara over here that those things are called Davar Gadol. That's why he says that. That's why I put them first. But the fact is, the more important thing for the average person is to focus more on Davar Katan, because you need to know what to do and what not to do, which is what you get out of the Gemara, what you get out of this Davar Katan. There are a couple of places in Chassidus where it talks about it, about this idea of how can we call Habayis about Dabai Varava Davar Katan. So actually there's a verse from the Baal Shem Tov on it in Keser Shem Tov that says, really Ma'ase Merkava and Habayis Dabai Varava are actually the very same thing. But Pashtus, we would understand those are two different areas of Torah. One is Kabbalah and one is Nistar and one is Nigla. The Baal Shem Tov brings in Keser Shem Tov, no. What it means is, in other words, a person can be learning Habayis Dabai Varava as just like a personal thing because it's interesting to me or because I want to be called Rebbe or whatever. Then it would be called a Davar Katan. On the other hand, you have a person who learns these things, who learns Habayis Dabai Varava, who learns Gemara, and in a way of being bottled to the Eivishter and to become a Merkava for the Eivishter, then that is called, that learning itself is called Ma'ase Merkava, and then it is a Davar Gadol, then it's far beyond his own human capabilities, then it's a great thing. There's a number of places in Chassidus also where it talks about the idea that after all, the Torah is nishtalshel down into our world, and in that sense, havayis davay v'rava are a dove of cotton compared to what we usually think of as ma'aseh merkava, secrets of Kabbalah and all. But nevertheless, we're not, again, like similar to what the Ritva said. It's not that they're unimportant, chas v'shalom, but we're calling them dove of cotton because after all, they are condensed down into our world. They are condensed down into something that we can understand and something that we apply in our daily lives, and therefore they're called dove of cotton for that reason. So l'kayim mashenemar. So this that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai knew all these things. This fulfills what it says in the pasuk. Hashem says lahanchil oyavai yesh, to give as an inheritance to those who love me, to give them yesh, which is the 310 worlds that it says in the last Mishnah of Mishnayos that every tzaddik is going to get. But it's reisehem amalei, and I will fill up their treasuries. In other words, like you have Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai over here was filled up with treasuries of knowledge of Torah and of things outside of Torah. And he was remember that he was the smallest and the least great of all of Hillel's Talmidim. So now we have to ask, if even the least of Hillel's Talmidim was so great as Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, then imagine how great the great one was. We said the greatest one was Yonasan ben Uzziel. Imagine how great he was. So Omru Olival Yonasan ben Uzziel. So they said about Yonasan ben Uzziel, he was so great. When he would be sitting and learning Torah and delving into Torah, any bird that would fly over him would immediately get burnt up. Because Rashi says there were malachi asharis surrounding Yonasan ben Uzziel to hear when he's learning Torah, and therefore their fire would burn up any bird that passed by. Tosfos says, the vote is, that the Torah itself, to begin with, by Har Sinai, was given in fire. So therefore now, Yonasan ben Uzziel, when he learned, then he had that same kind of fire around him. That everyone's mentioned in a sicha of a Gleich Vertel that they said when he was in Cheder, that this Gemara would be an example of the difference between the way a Chassid and a Masnagid, one of the old style Masnagidim, learns Torah, where the Chassid is very impressed about the Kedusha of Yonasan ben Uzziel and then coming to a greater appreciation of Alakos through that, whereas the old time Masnagid starts clearing, well, if the bird passes by and gets burnt, is Yonasan ben Uzziel Chayev or is he not Chayev, and then starts delving into all of that rather than being overawed by the Kedusha of him, which is what the Gemara is telling us for. Okay. Mishnah says, Mishahaya Roshe V'ruba Basukkah. If a person had his head and most of his body in the Sukkah, V'shulchone V'seichabayis, and his table inside the house. Now, we learned previously on Daf Gimel that there's two possibilities there. You can have where the sukkah is physically large enough to fit the table, but he just didn't feel like schlepping it inside. So he eats, so it's as a large sukkah, but he sits by the edge of the sukkah with his table indoors. Or the other possibility was that it means that the sukkah is not large enough to fit the table. It's less than 7 by 7 tefachim. So Beis Shammai Poslan or Beis Hillel Machshirin, Beis Shammai says it's posel, Beis Hillel says it's kosher. So again, we talked about on Daf Gimel that at least as far as the matter of the size of the sukkah, the halacha is like Beis Shammai. This is one of those rare cases where the halacha is like Beis Shammai. As far as the case where the sukkah is large, so therefore sukkah has to be at least 7 by 7 tefachim. The case where the sukkah is large, but he just doesn't bring the sukkah in, there's a machlokes rishonim whether the halacha is also like Beis Shammai in that as well. Most of them say that yes. So you're not makayim in the mitzvah of sukkah with your table inside. So Beis Hillel says it's kosher. How can you say it's no good? Didn't it once happen? The elders of Beis Shammai and the elders of Beis Hillel one time went to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Hacheronis. That was his name. Tosfos on Daf Gimel says that he was sick. Maybe they had that in their gear over here. Anyway, so they went to visit him. They found him sitting with his head and most of his body in the sukkah and his table inside the house. And they didn't say anything to him, implying that it was perfectly fine and that even the Ziknei Beis Shammai were fine with it. So what are you having a problem with it? So Beis Shammai answers them, Mishom Raya, you're bringing a proof from that. As a matter of fact, you don't have the complete story. Afheim Omrulai. In fact, the Ziknei Beis Shammai at least said to him, Im Kein HaYisanoyeg, if this is how you used to always act, Loi Kiyamta Mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha, then you have never kept the Mitzvah of Sukkah. Rishonim argue what Beis Shammai means by that. Do they mean that a person is actually not Yotze on a Daraisa level? Or do you mean Daraisa is Yotze, but the Chachamim said that he shouldn't, and therefore he's not fulfilling the Mitzvah in the real, in the ideal way. But at least on a Daraisa level, maybe he would be Yotze. Anyway, the point is, so Beis Shammai is saying that, yes, most definitely the elders of Beis Shammai did speak up and say that there's a problem over here. So it could be, you know, it could be that maybe the Ziknei Beis Hillel left and then the Ziknei Beis Shammai said that, in which case that would explain why the Ziknei Beis Hillel didn't know about that point. The Gemara, by the way, in Yevamos points out an interesting thing from this, or not in Yevamos, rather in Eruvin, you know, so we learned it some time back. The Gemara mentions over there why Beis Hillel had the schus that the halacha is generally like them is because, among other things, they were humble and they would put Beis Shammai ahead of themselves. And the Gemara over there brings our Mishnah as an example. Now, you have, usually, and you have many times in the Mishnah where it says Beis Shammai says such and such and Beis Hillel says such and such. That's not really a clear raya because it doesn't mean that Beis Hillel necessarily learned it in that order. Maybe just when Rebbe organized the Mishnah, he put it in that order. But we have an example over here where Beis Hillel themselves are speaking and they themselves mentioned Ziknei Beis Shammai, Ziknei Beis Hillel. So we see that they were humble and they put Beis Shammai ahead of themselves, even just in telling over a story like this. And that the Gemara explains over there is one of the reasons why they have this chos that generally the halacha is established like that. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Noshim ba'avodim k'tanim p'turim min asukah, women and slaves, avodim k'nanim, that is, as we learned at the beginning of the perek, and children are potter from sukkah, and we'll see in the Gemara why. Cotton she'enit sarach le'imai chayev b'sukah. On the other hand, a child who does not need his mother anymore, and we'll see in the Gemara what the definition of that is chayev in sukkah, darabanan, that is, for chinuch. How the Mishnah continues though, Maisa v'yolda kalosish or Shammai Azokin. It happened once that Shammai Azokin's daughter-in-law gave birth during Sukkot, or shortly before Sukkot. Upiches es ha'maziva. So Shammai Azokin broke open the plaster on the ceiling, and then made a hole over there. V'sikach agabe amita and put schach over the bed v'shvil cotton because of the child. Now, in other words, what it comes out is that Shammai, as the Gemara is going to say on our days, Shammai is machmir and holds that even a child is chayev in the mitzvah of sukkah. There is that now, on the pashtus, what we mean is the child who was just born, in which case it would mean that Shammai doesn't hold, like what we just said, that only if he's enit sarach le'imai. On the other hand, there is an explanation. The Maharshal brings some other mefarshim on the Mishnah bring that maybe what the cotton over here is not the newborn baby, but another child, an older child of this daughter-in-law who still needed his mother. So there, in other words, the Gemara is going to explain on other days a definition of a child who's old enough to not need his mother, which the poskim say is about 5, 6, maybe 7 years old. So you have, let's say, a kid over there who was 3 or 4 years old and he still needed his mother, so he's still there together with her while she's in bed after childbirth, and therefore that Shammai broke open the ceiling to put schach for the sake of that child, not for the newborn. Okay, but in any case, the Gemara is going to point out that it means that Shammai disagrees with the Tana of our mission. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Nahani mili." From where do we know that women are potter from sukkah? And once we know that women are potter, automatically we know that avodim knanim are potter because the general rule is, the Gemara learns elsewhere from Gzeira Shava, that in general mitzvahs that women are potter from, avodim knanim are also potter from. So how do we know to begin with that women are potter? Now, the Gemara is going to ask later, what do you mean? Of course they're potter. It's mitzvah sesa shazman grama. So we'll get back to that point later. But first, the Gemara is going to give a different derivation of it. So the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says, Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yeshu b'sukkos. Every ezrach among the Jewish people should live in sukkos. So we talked about the other day, the word ezrach literally means a citizen. So sometimes the Pasuk uses ezrach as opposed to a ger. Sometimes not. Sometimes ezrach in general includes all Jews. The idea would be, in other words, that an ezrach would be as opposed to a ger toisha. A ger toisha who's accepted shev mitzvah neneach is allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael, but like he doesn't have citizenship rights, so to speak. He just has the right to live there. So ezrach, as opposed to that, would be any Jew who has permanent residence in Eretz Yisrael, namely whether a born Jew or a ger. The Ramban, by the way, brings a very interesting idea that the word Ezrach also suggests somebody who's living very comfortably. You have a Pasuk in Tehillim, for example, that refers to Ezrach Ranan, a fresh, vibrant Ezrach. So therefore, he says, we talked about the other day, we talked about yesterday, about Mitztar, a person who's feeling discomfort in the sukkah, that he's potter from it. The Ramban says that we learn from the fact that it says Ezrach, rather than the Torah could have just said Kol Yisrael or something like that. Anyway, so the Tana Rabban, I'm going back to the Gemara, Ezrach is a Ezrach. When it said, if the Pasuk had just said, Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael, without the hay, then it would mean every Ezrach, then it would mean every Jew, whether man or woman. But it says, Ha Ezrach, but it says, the Ezrach, Lahotzi Es Anashim, then that comes to exclude women. So women, therefore, are potter from Sukkah. And Kol Ha Ezrach, and Kol L'Rabbis Zaktanim. And when it says, on the other hand, Kol Ha Ezrach, then it comes to include children. That's the Braisa. Now let's analyze it. Omer Mar Ha Ezrach Lahotzi Es Anashim. Ha Ezrach Lahotzi Es Anashim. So the word Ha Ezrach, the hay, comes to exclude women, that they're potter from Sukkah. So the question is, L'Memer De Ezrach Ben Noshim Ben Gavri Mashma. So you're telling me that by default, the word Ezrach, if it didn't have the hay, would automatically mean men and women. Bahatanya, where we learn in a different Braisa regarding Yom Kippur, where also it uses the word Ha Ezrach, where it says that everybody has to fast on Yom Kippur, Ha Ezrach Vagir Agor B'Sechem, and the Pasuk says, and so it says over there, Ha Ezrach, and L'Rabbis is Anashim Ha Ezrachiyas Shechayavis Be'inu. And they were saying that the word Ha Ezrach comes to include the women who are Ezrachim as well, who are Jews as well, who are Chayiv and Inui, the Chayiv and all the, in fasting and all the other afflictions of Yom Kippur. Alma Ezrach Gavri Mashma. So on the contrary, the word Ezrach by itself means men, and Ha Ezrach includes women. So why over there are we saying that Ezrach means men and Ha Ezrach includes women? And here it's the other way around. We're saying if it said Ezrach, it would have meant men and women, and Ha Ezrach means not women. The answer is Omer Rabba, Hilchasin Ninhu. The answer is Rabba says we're not really learning from the Psukim themselves. There's actually halachos, there's halachos, the Moshe Mishinai, of whether which ones women are chayiv and potter in, bas mechinu rabbanon akroi, the chachamim attach them to psukim. By definition, halacha l'moshe Mishinai is not something that we learn from a pasuk. So over here, what we have is, in other words, both these drashas are asmachtas. It's true we can't possibly say that in one place we're going to learn from the hay to include women and another one we're going to learn to exclude them. So really what it is these two drushes are only asmachtas, the actual halachas themselves, we don't know from those psukim, but rather from halach l'moshe Mishinai. So the question is, hey krav, hey hilchsa. If you're going to say it that way, then which one of these things are we learning from the actual wording of the pasuk? Whereas which one is halacha l'moshe Mishinai? Oh, sorry, we didn't say that both of them are halacha l'moshe Mishinai. What Rabbah is saying to them is one of them is halacha l'moshe Mishinai. The other one we're actually learning from the pasuk. So which one is which? The Gemara asks. The two krav lamali. And anyway, we have to ask, why would we even need a pasuk? Why would we even need a halacha l'moshe Mishinai? Ha-sukkah mitzvah seseh shazman groma. After all, sukkah is a time-bound mitzvah. V'chol mitzvah seseh shazman groma noshim turis. And then we know that women are potter from those kinds of mitzvahs. So why would we anyway need a pasuk to tell us that women are potter from sukkah? So, and also, we have to ask, what about Yom Kippurim? Why do we need a pasuk for Yom Kippur? Midir of Yehoda Amar Rav Nafka. We should be able to know that women are chayev to fast and to do the other, and to do the other inuim of Yom Kippur. We should know that they're chayev automatically based on what Rav Yehoda Amar Rav says. The Amar of Yehoda Amar Rav, b'chein tana dvei Rav Yishmael, Amar Kro, the pasuk says, ish oi isha, a man or a woman, and it goes on to talk about when they do certain avedas, they're chayev a korban asham. We learn from that, hishva kosev isha l'ish, l'chol oinshin shabat Torah. We learn from that the Torah equates men and women as far as all penalties in the Torah. So in other words, women are chayev in all or almost all of the loisa says in the Torah. One of the loisa says in the Torah is don't eat on Yom Kippur, or, you know, don't do malach on Yom Kippur, etc. So therefore obviously women are chayev. So we have a bunch of questions. Why do we need to be told by sukkah that they're potter, and why do we need to be told by Yom Kippur that they're chayev when we know that from other sources as well? Amar Abaya, Sabaya answers, La'olam hilchasa. In fact, Rabba is La'olam sukkah hilchasa. In fact, the answer is yes. Like Rabba said, one of these two halachas is a halacha l'mesh misinai. We're not learning from the actual psukim. The one that is the halacha l'mesh misinai, and therefore that the pasuk is only an asmachta, is sukkah. Ah, you're going to say sukkah is mitzvah seseh shasmat. So in other words, the one about Yom Kippur, taka, we're learning from the pasuk that they're chayev. That they're chayiv, especially because after all, by Yom Kippur, you have a lav not to do malacha. It doesn't actually say, as we learned in Yuma a few weeks back, it doesn't actually say in so many words, don't eat on Yom Kippur. It says anybody who doesn't is going to be chayiv karis. But so in fact the pasuk, the one that we're learning for the pasuk is for Yom Kippur. But sukkos really it's halacha l'mishmi sinai. The itzrich, but still we need the halacha l'moshe Sinai to tell us that they're potter, even though it's a mitzvah seshas mangrama, because otherwise, sakudai dechamina, otherwise you would have thought, teishvu ke'indaduru, as we've said a few times the last few days, you're supposed to live in the sukkah like you live in your house throughout the year, and that means ma dira ishvi ishtoi, just like in a person's dwelling, in a person's house, he lives there the whole year round with his wife, af sukkah ishvi ishtoi, you would have thought that sukkah is the same thing. And therefore, the wife has to be in there as well. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the halacha l'moshe misinai comes to tell us, no, don't think that way. Women are still possible. Rava Amar. Rava says there's another reason. Itzrich. There's another reason we need the halacha l'moshe misinai. Sakra ad hamina. Without that, we would have thought, yalif chamisha osa, mechagamatzis. Otherwise, maybe we should be learning by Gzeira Shava from the Chamisha also that it says by Chagamatzis, which we talked about that Gzeira Shava yesterday, that we learned from that you have to eat the first night in the Sukkah. And you have to eat a Kazayis, and then you have to eat a Kibetza, rather, in the Sukkah the first night. So that Zeta Shava might have also said, we would have thought, Malahala Noshim Chayavis, Afkan Noshim Chayavis, just like over there, women are chayav and eating matzah the first night. And we know that because the Gemara in Pesachim tells us there's a hekesh between not eating chametz and eating matzah. So anybody who's chayav not to eat chametz is chayav to eat matzah the first night. And since women are also to eat chametz, because we said before, they're subject to all the same lavim and penalties as men, then therefore therefore they're chayav in matzah. So we would have thought that the Gzeira Shava would teach us that also by sukkah women are chayav, kamash malan, therefore the halacha l'moshe misinai tells us that not. Okay. So now the question is, so ultimately, if you're saying that we're learning the fact that women are potter from sukkah from halacha l'moshe misinai and not really from the pasuk, then why do we have the pasuk at all? Why does the pasuk have to say ha'ezrach? The answer is l'rabbis is a gerim. It comes to include gerim. After all, sakudat chamina. Otherwise, you would have thought ha'ezrach b'Yisrael amarachmana. Maybe the word ha'ezrach among Jews means v'loyas a gerim, means not gerim. And after all, we do have some places in the psukim where you have some places in Torah where it says ha'ezrach b'ager, and therefore the ger is a separate category than ezrach. Ezrach would mean a born Jew, and ger would be something else. So over here, you might have thought that ha'ezrach means only born Jews, a chayiv and sukkah, not gerim. Kamash malan, therefore, the ha'ezrach, the hey, comes to add also gerim as well. Okay. Now, what about going back to Yom Kippur? We said, why do we need, if we're saying that the fact that women are potter from sukkah is halacha l'moshe misinai, that means, in other words, that by elimination, this that they're chayiv in Yom Kippur is based on a pasuk. So again, the question is, Yom Kippur in midir Rabbi Yehuda amar Rav Nafka. We learn that from Rabbi Yehuda's statement in the name of Rav, that women are chayiv in all the lavim and all the penalties that men are. And the answer is, lo nitzricha ela l'toisvus. The answer is yes, but the pasuk from which we learn that women, the fact that it says ha'ezrach over there, and we learn from that women are chayiv in the inuri of Yom Kippur, that comes to include also that they're chayiv in tosfas Yom Kippurim, the fact that they have to start the inuri of Yom Kippur a little bit before the actual day begins. Just as men are chayiv, women are chayiv. So, because otherwise, sakdat hamina, otherwise you would have thought, since the Torah tells us that the Tosfos, there's no penalty for it, and there's no warning for it, a person eats or drinks or does malacha on Yom Kippur itself, the Chayav Karis. But if a person does that during Tosfos, Yom Kippurim, during that extra little time that you add before Yom Kippur proper begins, then there's no lav on that, And there's no kares on that. He's being over on a mitzvah saseh, where the Torah says that you should add a little bit to Yom Kippur. So therefore, so you would think, so maybe women shouldn't be chayiv at all. Therefore, we need the pasuk ha'ezra to tell us that they are in fact chayiv in that as well. With that said, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, in Beitza in particular, that you have women who don't know that, women in those times who were less familiar with halachas, and they didn't know that, and they were continuing to eat and drink until Yom Kippur itself actually begins. Not necessarily do you have to tell them about it, because even if you tell them, they're not necessarily going to listen, and there it's one, and since it's only Dirabbanan, and not really Dirabbanan, but whatever, it's not a strong chiyuv as the full Daraisa, then therefore we say mutav shiyu shogin b'alyu mezidin. This is an example where we say better that they should be doing what they're going to be doing mistakenly without knowing, rather than we're going to tell them that it's wrong to do, and they're going to continue doing it anyway, and then they're going to be doing it b'mezid. Fine. So that covers then how we know that women are potter from sukkah is really from halacha l'moshe m'sinai, which is needed to tell us, because otherwise we would have thought for various reasons, because of teishu kain taduru or because of the gzeira shava, that they're chayiv. And in the case of Yom Kippur, we're being told not that they're chayiv in Yom Kippur itself, that we know, but that they're chayiv also in Tosfos Yom Kippur. Now, Omar Mar Kol Rabbis Taktanim. Now, we continued in the Braisa before on Amud Aleph that the word Kol Ha'ezrach means that children are chayiv and well, are chayiv as well. So the Gemara says, "What do you mean?" V'atnan. We learned in the Mishnah, Noshim Avodim Taktanim Pturim Min Asuka. The answer is like Kasha Kan B'Katan Sheigia L'Chinuch Kan B'Katan Shalai Gina L'Chinuch. It depends whether the child reached the age of Chinuch, which is, like we said, he doesn't need his mother, which we're going to define in a couple of lines. What that means, Kan B'Sheinu Kan B'Katan Shalai Gina L'Chinuch. And the other one is where he didn't reach that age. So the Mishnah is saying he's potter up to the age of chinuch, and then we're saying in the Braisa that after that he's chayiv midaraisa. So the Gemara says, what do you mean midaraisa? Cotton shigiyah chinuch midirabbanan. What do you mean that a child of the age of chinuch should be chayiv in the mitzvahs or itself only dirabbanan? The whole concept of chinuch, the whole concept that a child should be obligated in some mitzvah can't be daraisa. It has to be dirabbanan. So what are you telling me that we're learning it from a word and a pasuk? And the answer is again, midrabbanan ukra asmachta ba'alvu. Again, the answer is that really it's only dirabbanan. The word kol is only an asmachta for that the chachamim used it. That is a basis for saying that a child has a certain chiyuv when he reaches a certain age. What is the pasuk really being used for? So we talked about yesterday, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it teaches us that if a person became a ger during the middle of Sukkot, then he's obligated in Sukkah from then on, as opposed to everybody else has to have a Sukkah for all 7 days. And according to the Chachamim, we said over there that the kol comes to teach us that kol Yisroel, ru'in l'shem, b'sukkah achas, that all Jews could use one Sukkah, one after the other, meaning that you're allowed to borrow somebody else's Sukkah. So really, the word kol is coming from those drushes, and the fact that we're using it to say that a child is chayiv in sukkah once he's of the age of chinuch is only an asmachta. Okay, so now what is the definition of that? We said in the Mishnah, cotton chain at tzarech le'imay chula, a child who doesn't need his mother is chayiv in sukkah. So heichidami, what does that mean that he doesn't need his mother? Heichidami, cotton chain at tzarech le'imay. Amid ve Rabbi Yanai, so they said in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, kol shim nifne ve'ein imay mekanachter. When he goes to the bathroom and his mother doesn't have to wipe that, then he's considered of the age that ain't it tzarech le'imay. Reb Shimon Lakish, it says on the side, a different definition. Kol sheneir mishnasei ve'enei koyre ima. When he wakes up from sleeping and he doesn't call out for his mother. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Do them nami koru ima. Even older children sometimes call for their mother when they wake up. Ela kol sheneir ve'enei koyre ima ima. He doesn't call again and again, mommy, mommy, until she comes. He may call once, but then if she doesn't come, then he goes back to sleep or he deals with whatever he needs to himself. But if he's still of the age where he's calling repeatedly for her until she comes, then he's a kotten shetzarech le'imay. And the post can talk about that amounts to, for most children, it amounts to about age 5 or 6, maybe 7. So up until that age, they're potter from sukkah. After that, you start being mechanech them in the mitzvah of sukkah. There are some of the Rishonim that seem to imply that it's actually the same thing, that when the child is old enough to not be wiped anymore by his mother, then generally that's also the age where he grows out of having to call for his mother repeatedly when he wakes up. Whatever, in terms of ages, we're talking about 5, 6, 7 years old. We said in the Mishnah, Mice of a Yolda Kalosifullah, we said it happened that Shammai's daughter-in-law gave birth during Sukkot, and he put Tzchach up. So the question is, Maisa Lister, does the Mishnah bring a story in order to contradict what we said before? We just said before that a katan who is below that age is not chayiv in Sukkah, so why now are we saying that Shammai put up Tzchach for such a child? The answer is Chasuri Masra. The Mishnah is missing a phrase. V'hochi katani, what it means is, V'shammai machner, Shammai holds that, no, even a katan who needs his mother is chayiv in Sukkah. The Ritva discusses, did Shammai maybe hold that this is part of the Mechir of Daraisa? Because again, Teishvu Kein Taduru. The whole year round, you live with your spouse and your children in your house. So therefore, maybe on Sukkot, you're also required to have your children over there. Or maybe Shammai held that it's a matter of, that it's a matter of Chinuch, which would be Dirabana then. Anyway, so Shammai is Machmir, and the Mishnah continues, a Mais and Nami, and in fact, it once happened, the Yolda Kolosesh, or Shammai Azokin, that Shammai Azokin's daughter gave birth, or Pichas is a Maziv, or Pesikach HaLamitav Yishvila Katan. So we see that Shammai is Machmir, and disagrees with the Tana of the Mishnah. Okay. Mishnah says, Kol Shiva Sayyamin, throughout the 7 days of Sukkot, Adam Oisa Sukose Keva, a person has to make his sukkah be his regular permanent dwelling, or Beise Arai, and his house is like an incidental thing. We'll see in the Gemara practical examples of that. But in other words, like we talked about yesterday, in definition, the way the sukkah is built is diras ha, right? It's a temporary thing. That's we said before, for example, that's one reason why the Chachamim said that a sukkah is limited to 20 amos, and Rabbi Yehuda had disagreed. Because according to the Chachamim, a sukkah needs to be diras ha, right? But for those 7 days, you take that diras ha, right, and make it into your regular dwelling. That's your main place where you live. And his house is only the incidental thing. Yodush, and after all, that's the idea. I mean, the whole idea of sitting in a sukkah is to remember how the Eibishter protected us in the desert. So therefore, that's during those 7 days, that's how you're doing. You're showing that I'm not living in my comfortable house. I'm living in a sukkah and trusting to Hashem's protection. Continues the Mishnah. Yoduk Shomim, if rain falls during Sukkot, Me'emes Ha'mutal Lefanais, at what point are you allowed to clear your stuff out of the sukkah and go eat and sleep indoors? Meshatisra Hamikvah, when there's so much rain that a mikvah would spoil. A mikvah is a kind of porridge. So Rashi describes it's not something thin like soup. It's not something thick like it's something in between. It's something like a porridgey type food. So that kind of thing is easily ruined by the rain. So when you have, because once enough rain falls that such a dish would get ruined, then you're allowed to go inside. The Chachamim gave a mashal to give an idea what is this like when it rains during Sukkot, and therefore we can't be mekayim mitzvah. It's like a slave who comes to pour a cup of to mix water into a cup of wine for his master. The shafach lekitten up the shafach lekitten upon of and he throws. And he pours the jug in his face. The Gemara is going to discuss two possibilities. Does it mean that the master poured it or that the slave poured it? The Gemara is going to end up saying it means that the master poured it. In other words, like the master throws the water in the slave's face and says, "I don't need you." In the same way, when it rains during Sukkot, it's like Hashem showing, "I don't need you in the Sukkot now." With that said, I mean, so we'll talk about more tomorrow, Beis Hashem, about some details in that and about why it is that we do sit in the Sukkah even when it's raining. But it is worth mentioning, the Rogachover says that this only applies when it started raining during Sukkot. When it was raining before Sukkot and continues into Sukkot, not necessarily would this apply. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbana, we learn in a Braisa, so let's talk about some practical examples, what it means of making your sukkah keva. Kol shiva seyamim odom oisa sukkose keva ubeise arai. What does that mean, that for 7 days a person makes a sukkah his real dwelling place and his house only something incidental? Ketzad, what does that mean? Hoyu loy kelim noyim. If a person had nice furniture or nice dishes, Malam the sukkah, then he should bring them into the sukkah. Malam means to bring them up, like we've talked about before, because they usually built the sukkah on their roof. So you should bring this nice stuff into the sukkah. Matzah is nice, if he has nice mats where people would sit on mats, malam l'sukkah, and then he should put him in the sukkah. Oichel v'shoy, say he should eat and drink, or matayel v'sukkah, and he should also be matayel in the sukkah. Literally, matayel means to take a walk, to take a stroll, but it not necessarily doesn't mean that, because your sukkah is not always physically large enough to take a stroll in. Another meaning of matayel actually means to play, so when a person is playing or relaxing or whatever, he should also be doing it in the sukkah. So the Gemara says, Minahani, where do we know all this from? We learn in a bright. So the pasuk says, Teishu, you should live in your sukkah. And as we've said a bunch of times, Ke'ein Taduru, that means you should live in your sukkah the way you dwell in your house the rest of the year. Mikan Omru, based on this, the Chachamim said, Kol Shivasa Yamam Adam Oisa Adam Sukkah Sekeva, or Besi Arai. For the 7 days, the person should be making his sukkah, his main place, and his house, his incidental place. Ketzan, what does that mean? Hoyla Kalim Noim, like we just said, if he has nice dishes or nice furniture, Malam Lasukkah, you should bring it into the sukkah. Matsois No, he's malas malam l'sukkah. If he has nice mats, he should bring him into the sukkah. Oichel v'shoyso m'tayel v'sukkah. He should eat and drink and play in the sukkah. And also umeshanin v'sukkah. Also, he should learn Torah in the sukkah. So Gemara says about that last one. Ani, is that so? V'ha'amad Rava. Didn't Rava say it depends what kind of learning we're talking about? Mikra or misne b'metal alta, to learn Tanakh or to learn Mishnayis, which are relatively easy things. Those you just have to review what you already know. Those should be b'metalalta in the sukkah. Metalalta is the Aramaic word for sukkah. B'tanuye b'metalalta. But once it comes to learning Gemara, learning Talmud, where then you have to think about it. Where then you have to think about it and delve into it, and you need a comfortable place to do it. So that should be bar mitzvah. That can be outside the sukkah, because then that would be mitzvah. That would be a person might not be able to concentrate properly in the sukkah, especially if you've said a number of times sukkahs in those days usually only had 3 walls, so you might not have enough privacy. You might have distractions or whatever, and therefore that you can do outside the sukkah. So what are you telling me that your learning should have to be in the sukkah when Rava is telling us that it depends? And the answer is like Kasha, Hob Migras Hob Yuni. It depends whether we're talking about reviewing the Gemara that he knows already within Gemara itself. You can have where he's reviewing what he already knows, so therefore there's not much tzair in it, because he doesn't need such an enclosed area to do it in, so that he can do it in the sukkah, as opposed to but Yuni, to be ma'ayin, to delve into the reasons behind it. There, that should be outside the sukkah. Because that should be outside the sukkah, because for that he needs more concentration. And in particular, actually, Rashi says what it might be is the sukkah might be too small for him. That's the part. It's not just that the sukkah is open on one side, etc., but also the sukkah is too small, really. So therefore, he may need a larger open area outside the sukkah in order to be ma'ayin and delve into understanding the reasons behind the Gemara. So that he can do outside the sukkah. And the Gemara gives an example. He had the Rava Bar Chama, or Rava B'Rami Bar Chama, it says on the side, Ki Habu Kaimi Mikamei de Rav Chista, these two, Rava and Rami Bar Chama, they were Talmidim of Rav Chista. So when they would get up from learning in front of Rav Chista, after he had taught them something in Gemara, Merahati b'sukkah, they would first run through it quickly. Merahati b'gemara b'hadi hadadi. First, they would run through the Gemara together, rerun quickly through what they heard from him. This is Osir, this is Mutar, etc. So they would do that together. B'hodr ma'ayni b'svara, then they would delve into the reasons. Why is this Osir? Why is that Mutar? Is there something? Do we have a Mishnah or a Braisa or a Svara or whatever that we can refute that from? So we see that there's a difference between just learning Gemara as in just running through it, what you already know, versus coming up with new ideas. So therefore, one of them is in the sukkah and the other one is out of the sukkah. Okay. More rules about what's inside the sukkah and what's outside. The Gemara says, Omar Rava, money mishtiya b'metalata, things for drinking, for example, cups, belong inside in the sukkah, because those are not dirty. Money mechla b'metalata, but the dishes for food, after you ate from them, those are dirty and disgusting. Therefore, you have to take them out of the sukkah. Tosfos gives a different definition. It means, for example, things that you would never usually have by your table in the first place. For example, pots and kneading trays and things like that. Things that you would usually have in a house or a room of their own, like in the kitchen rather than in the dining room. Both of those are brought in Shulchan Aruch. So yeah, the dirty dishes should be taken out of the sukkah, out of respect for the sukkah, and also things like pots and whatever that you usually wouldn't bring to your table throughout the year should not be brought into the sukkah. Also, chatzva v'shochil. A chatzva is an earthenware jug that you use for drawing water. V'shochil, or wooden pail that you use for drawing water. Those also, bar mimatalata, those belong outside the sukkah, because again, those are not things that you usually keep on your table throughout the rest of the year. On the other hand, ushraga b'matalata, but the candles should be inside the sukkah. However, v'amriva, but others say bar mimatalata, that no, the candles should be outside the sukkah. The candles should be outside the sukkah as well. And the Gemara says v'loy pligi, they're not actually arguing. Hal b'sukkah gedola, hal b'sukkah ktana. It depends whether you're talking about a large sukkah or a small sukkah. Small being that it's exactly 7 by 7 tefachim, large being larger than that. So the vote is, there's a few reasons. Number one, because Tosfos says because you might burn down your sukkah. So therefore it's not good to have it in there. Another reason that Ritva brings is because you have to stay far away from it so you don't catch on fire. So therefore you're leaving yourself less room to move around in the sukkah. And you're talking about it's a sukkah barely 7 by 7 tefachim. So as it is, it's only big enough for Rosh HaVerubai, therefore don't have the candle or the lamp in there. There are poskim that also bring an earthenware lamp shouldn't be in the sukkah because an earthenware lamp gets very dirty and an earthenware oil lamp gets very dirty and disgusting very fast, and therefore it's not respectful to have it in the sukkah. But if you have a larger sukkah, then we're saying that the candles, for example, the Shabbos or Yom Tov candles, can be in the sukkah.